In the first of today's underreported segments, I spoke about the rise in hate crimes across Russia with Paul Legendre of Human Rights First and Nikolai Butkevich of the Union of Councils for Jews in the former Soviet Union. Now, to put things into a broader context, I'm joined by Paul Goebel, professor at the Institute of World Politics in Washington, D.C. Welcome.
Thank you.
Were there any skinheads in Russia before the fall of communism?
There were small numbers of them. Most of them were very much marginalized. They were in working-class areas in a few major cities, but nothing like we see today. Now there are arguably 100,000 or more who've been more or less identified.
Well, are they expressing feelings that were just under the surface in the old days, or has there been major recruitment of disaffected youth?
Well, I think we have to understand that there's been a coming together of three or four factors that have produced this rise in xenophobia and willingness to engage in violence. First, many, many Russians feel that the end of the Soviet Union diminished their status in the world, that they're not taken seriously anymore, and they're angry. Second, there's been a demographic collapse of the ethnic Russian population. Ethnic Russians are having very few children. The death rate is quite high among working-age men. Life expectancy for men now among Russians is down in around 57 or 58 years, whereas the non-Russians, the non-ethnic Russians, the Chechens, the Tatars, the Bashkirs, and so on, have been growing very, very rapidly. And as a result, many Russians feel that their status is under threat. And third, you've had over the last 15 years since the end of the Soviet Union a collapse in public order in many parts of the society. The militia is increasingly corrupt. People can engage in violence and get away with it. And so what you see is copycat crime, a lot of anger, a sense of grievance, and it's not surprising that people going through this kind of process would behave this way, however horrible it is.
Now, why are people dying younger, and why has the birth rate fallen?
The birth rate has fallen, I think, both for the reasons we see it falling in many European countries, rapid urbanization, rapid gains in education, more women working outside the home as a result. Having five or six children is just not something people want to do, and you see it declining. I mean, the average ethnic Russian woman in the city of Moscow has 1.1 children over the course of her lifetime. That's less than half of the replacement level, and it's lower than in Italy, for example. The death rates, however, among working-age men from age 18 to 55 are almost all tied to massive overconsumption of alcohol. It's probable that the average man in that age group in the Russian Federation today is consuming 24 or 25 liters of pure alcohol a year. That's vastly more than anywhere else. It's leading to all kinds of illnesses and a large number of industrial accidents. So you've seen radical declines in life expectancy among men, a fall of 10 years overall since the 1980s, and a decline in some areas of even 20 and 30 years. The last 2 years I was living in Estonia, the Russian area just across the border, Pskov Oblast. Life expectancy for men there outside of the city of Pskov was under 50 years.
Oh, my.
And there are villages in Russia, one I was reading about over the weekend, where life expectancy is now under 30.
The Russian economy has generated huge income disparities. Does that breed frustration that might lead to extremist politics?
It can. Russians have never been used to this kind of disparity. The people before the revolution knew, but Russians who grew up in Soviet times, the very wealthiest people and the very poorest people were not that far apart. Now, with capitalism, there's been a radical dispersal, and there's a perception among many Russians that non-Russian groups, Jews, Chechens, Georgians, Azerbaijanis, are doing very much better than they are. That's not, in fact, true, but that's the perception, and perceptions drive behavior. And when you see large numbers of people who look different, Azerbaijanis or Central Asians, who are now living in major Russian cities in huge numbers, there are over 1 million ethnic Azerbaijanis in Moscow, for example, there's a tendency to say, my problems, it's their fault. And nationalist groups, xenophobic nationalist groups like the Movement Against Illegal Immigration and so forth, are playing to this, and what you see is violence, hatred, and mistreatment of minorities.
My guest is Paul Goebel, professor at the Institute of World Politics in Washington, D.C. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Well, during the Soviet years, Russians were sent or moved to many places where they were the minority and were resented. Now we're hearing the other side of the coin, people saying Russia for Russians, often connected to hate attacks.
Well, people who say Russia for Russians, and a lot of people do, make the point that the Russian Federation is the only one of the 15 countries that emerged out of the collapse of the Soviet Union that is not a national state. It is a state that is explicitly non-national, a federation. Many Russians resent that. They think it should be for them, but the point is that percentage of ethnic Russians in the Russian Federation is dropping. It's now down probably under 75%. The official figures are higher, but they're almost certainly falsified. The influx of migrants from Central Asia and the Caucasus is increasing. And a Russia for the Russians would create an apartheid-type system that would institutionalize violence of another kind. So it might be the occasion for the building of a state so authoritarian that it could prevent some of these specific kinds of violence, specific acts of violence, but the very big downside was that it would institutionalize discrimination of the kind we saw in South Africa before Nelson Mandela.
Are we seeing something similar in the other former communist countries? People saying Hungary for Hungarians, Poland for Poles?
Some people in all of these countries are playing up nationalist themes. It's unfortunately the case. The difference is that many of these countries are more monoethnic than the Russian Federation is. Many of them are feel that 1991 was a victory for them. After all, they got something. They got independence. The Russians feel they lost something, namely their status as a superpower that was the Soviet Union.
Has the Russian Orthodox Church taken a position on racism and discrimination?
The Patriarchate, Patriarch Alexei II, of course, has condemned it. There are, however, many members of the clerical hierarchy who are actively supporting the most xenophobic groups in Russian society. The church condemns it as an institution, but individual bishops, metropolitans, and priests are often very supportive on the notion that these are Russian boys who are doing these things only when they're pushed beyond limits by all of these others coming in from outside.
Anti-Semitism has remained a kind of constant in the area for centuries. After all, the Protocols of the Elders of Zion were a forgery of the Tsarist secret police. Now we're seeing open anti-Semitism being expressed again. Why has this remained such a serious problem there?
Anti-Semitism is something that is the Orthodox tradition in Russia supports an image of the Jews that Western Christianity has moved away from. In other words, blaming Jews for being involved in the death of Christ and so forth. And that has contributed. Also, Jews were urban when Russians were rural. There's a whole sociology of it. It's an ugly thing. The good news is that Western governments, Western human rights organizations, have spoken out repeatedly and vigorously. Your two earlier guests have focused on this issue, talking about attacks against Jews. there has been a much less vocal and organized campaign on behalf of other groups attacked in post-Soviet Russia.
People from the Caucasus, for example.
I mean, as someone who has worked as a specialist on non-Russians for the U.S. government for many years before retiring, I can tell you that it was a wonderful thing that you could count on Americans and Europeans to denounce instances of anti-Semitism instantly. It served as a limiting factor. Tragically, as you pointed out in the earlier segment, attacks on other groups have not gotten the same kind of immediate, broad, and very public condemnation.
And President Putin has been criticized in the West for backing the mayor of Moscow when he banned gay pride events in the city. So is intolerance part of government policy? Can we...
Yes.
Are we likely to see the Russian government and law enforcement agencies make changes in the way that hate crime is classified and prosecuted, or is it just going to continue the way it is?
The Russian government, top to bottom, is filled with people whose xenophobic attitudes are frightening, who tend to underreport attacks against minorities, overreport attacks by minorities against Russians. Mayor Lushkov of Moscow, whom you've just mentioned, 14 years ago today, as it happens, issued his infamous decree calling for the expulsion from the Russian capital of, quote, persons of Caucasus nationality, meaning everyone from the northern and southern Caucasus.
But wait, let me stop you for a second. If the birth rate is down and people are dying younger, don't they need immigrants just to carry on basic services?
They do need immigrants, but if they continue to treat them the way they are, it's going to be hard to attract them. And the attitudes of many Russians, and Mayor Lushkov is unfortunately one of the worst, against these migrants is going to create an economic and a cadre problem in the military that I see no easy way out for Russians in the immediate future.
Thank you so much for talking with us, Paul Goebel, professor at the Institute of World Politics in Washington, D.C.